Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. John Sauer appearing on behalf of the Attorney General in this matter. This Court's Rule 91.02a and Section 532.030 of the Missouri Revised Statutes both state that when a person who is held in custody on the charge of a crime seeks the benefit of Rule 91, seeks to file a habeas petition, that application must be directed to a judge of the circuit court for the county in which he is held in custody. So the question of whether or not the Jackson County Circuit Court has authority to proceed in this particular case turns on the meaning of the word custody in Rule 91.02 and the same use of the word custody in the habeas statute. The plain
Mr. Sauer, excuse me. We do have room up. Would you just wait? There are some citizens who would like to come in, and we have some room now in the front row. Apologize for interrupting.
Clock should stop.
Please stop the clock. If you just restart it, that would be great. You can restart it. Mr. Sauer doesn't have to if he doesn't want to. But if it's more convenient, he's welcome to do so as well. Thank you. You may proceed.
In this context, the plain and ordinary and natural meaning of the word custody refers to the legal authority and responsibility of the warden of the Crossroads Correctional Center to ensure that this particular petitioner carries out and remains constrained throughout the sentence that he's serving in that particular thing. Because the word custody refers to legal authority and responsibility to detain someone, not necessarily just to the immediate physical confinement, the relevant custody in this particular context is the custody that is exercised by the warden in DeKalb County, not by the very temporary confinement that occurs pursuant to the writ ad testificandum in Jackson County.
Aren't you distinguishing between whether the statute intends the word custody to mean physical presence or whether it means legal custody?
Yes, we are. I think that's correct. And I would actually direct the court to two different dictionary definitions of custody that emphasize this legal authority and not the immediate physical confinement. I think it's important that the statute and the rule do not say, you know, the place of confinement or the place of imprisonment. They say the place of custody. So, for example, Black's Law Dictionary defines custody as the care and control of a thing or person for inspection, preservation, or security, and immediately goes on to state that custody can include constructive custody, which is where something is controlled by legal authority but not under direct physical control. So the use of the word custody does not refer to the direct physical control that's exercised for 6 or 7 days by the director of the Jackson County facility. It's the legal authority and responsibility for ensuring that this person carries out their sentence. Webster's Third says the same thing. Webster's Third says custody is control of a thing or person with such actual or constructive possession as fulfills the purpose of the law or duty requiring it. Custody is not the same as imprisonment. It's not the same as confinement. It encompasses more than mere physical restriction. It refers to the sort of legal authority, this legal responsibility. And that's why several federal courts that have addressed this have pointed out when these prisoners are transferred by writs of testificandum, they said, this prisoner's not really challenging their confinement in the new and temporary location. For example, Judge Noonan's opinion in the Miller against Hambrick case, he says, look, the writ ad testificandum authorizes a trip. It doesn't authorize a change of custodians. And he says the restraint to which the petitioner objects is restraint imposed by the warden at the regular place of incarceration. His petition is not directed to the restraint he suffered in being moved to the new location to testify. And that's what we have here. This particular petitioner is not challenging the legality of the transfer from DeKalb County to Jackson County. In fact, he sought that transfer. He applied for the writ ad testificandum. And that's why the confinement in Jackson County is not what's legally challenged by the habeas petition. What the legality that is challenged is the confinement in DeKalb County over the long term. And that's why the plain and ordinary meaning of the word custody is what governs here. It's a legal authority and responsibility of the warden. And therefore, because even though he got to move for a few days to Jackson County, he is still in custody in DeKalb County, this habeas petition had to be addressed in the first instance to a judge in DeKalb County, and under Locke against CA, the proper remedy is to direct the court that is wrongfully exercising authority here to transfer the case to DeKalb County for it to be processed there.
What about the waiver argument in this particular situation? I mean, I'm sympathetic to your legal arguments, but this case has been going on for a long time, and all of a sudden it seems from the record that this is brought up kind of the last minute, and the trial court's got to deal with this when everything's kind of set up and ready to be tried.
I respectfully disagree with that characterization of the record, because Mr. Spillane filed a motion to transfer immediately. As soon as he entered in the case, within a few days, he had said, look, this case has to be transferred to DeKalb County. Then he raised that again by means of a second motion to attempt to have the proper respondent named in the case. And then when the amended petition was filed in the spring of this past year, he raised it by motion again. And these aren't motions that we sat on or smuggled on. And there was multiple attempts to attempt to get this particular circuit court to exercise authority appropriately and transfer the case to DeKalb County. The notion that there's been a waiver because we kind of, you know, gave the circuit court several opportunities to correct its own error before going through the unusual process of applying for extraordinary writ, I think it has no merit. I'm not aware of any support for a waiver argument in those particular circumstances. I think it'd be different if, like, there had been a motion filed and we just sat on the motion until right before trial. But these motions were noticed for hearing, they were heard, they were denied on three different separate occasions over the, you know, basically year and a few months that this application was pending before we sought the extraordinary writ in this case. And there was the further step of providing notice to the parties and to the circuit court in advance of the writ that we were going to do this, that resulted in some sort of follow-up actions there. There's another waiver argument that's made in this case that I think also lacks merit, and that's the argument that, in the circuit court pleadings, what we argued was it may have been proper as filed when he was initially in Jackson County, but now that he's been moved back to DeKalb County, he has to be transferred. And that legal theory we concede was erroneous. Follow-up research clarified that actually it was never proper from the very beginning. But because we always sought the exact same relief, we've just developed and refined the legal theory we're advancing that supports that relief. That's not a, there's no argument for judicial estoppel.
But your argument was that was made by a different party.
Yeah, also as well, that's true. Now, it was by the same attorneys on behalf, though, of First Director Connolly, who had invited the Attorney General's office to come in and represent him because of the unusual nature of this particular habeas application. This wasn't a misdemeanor conviction where you would apply it to that particular person.
Do you agree that the parties are currently correct?
No, I believe currently in the circuit court there is no respondent. So I believe that what the circuit judge has done is agreed with our argument made in the circuit court that Director Connolly had just no interest in this particular case, but declined to dismiss Director Connolly, but then declined to add the warden, the DeKalb warden, as the respondent. And this, I believe, we've argued in the brief, directly contradicts the plain language of some of the rules, which just say it shall be directed. For example, Rule 91.07, the writ shall be directed to the person having custody. So the rules don't contemplate a situation. There may be extraordinary circumstances where that would occur. I can't think of any. But the rules, by their plain terms, don't contemplate the situation that we currently have, which is a writ habeas proceeding occurring with no respondent at all.
Now, you have stated in your argument so far and in your brief extensive reliance on federal cases, and your opponent indicates that federal jurisprudence in this area really differs from Missouri as far as venue and jurisdiction is interpreted. Can you reply to that?
Absolutely. I totally disagree with that particular argument. The federal cases are highly persuasive. The only argument that I take them to be making to distinguish the federal cases is to say that jurisdiction and venue are the same in federal court and they're not the same in Missouri court, and that's really just not a fair characterization of federal law at all. We cited in our brief the discussion of this of various Supreme Court justices in Rumsfeld against Padilla, where they say when we use the word jurisdiction, we actually aren't talking about subject matter jurisdiction. We actually are talking about venue-like concepts, the very same concepts that the Missouri courts have used here. And I'd emphasize that though the federal court cases are not binding, they're extremely persuasive because they're all of them are interpreting the exact same word, custody, in the exact same statutory context, which is the habeas proceedings, habeas context, under exactly the same circumstances. We cited, I think, seven different cases where a federal prisoner obtained a temporary transfer to another jurisdiction, either on a writ ad testificandum or a writ ad prosequendum, and every single federal judge to look at this issue without dissent, to my knowledge, has said, this does not change the custodian. And we emphasize heavily the Poole case, which is really the most recent one and has a very detailed discussion of this, where the Fourth Circuit says, I mean, they expressly say we are interpreting the word custody, and the word custody, the custody has not changed when the prisoner came from Kentucky to Maryland on a writ ad testificandum. But again, that's not the only case. I mean, there's Miller against Hambrick.
But the underlying procedure here was a test, it was DNA testing. and the root of testicle condom was used to get him back to Jackson County where the DNA proceeding was lodged. So is that a distinction?
I don't think that makes any difference. It's very similar what happened to Poole. It wasn't a motion for DNA testing, but in the Poole case, for example, it was a motion to reconsider the sentence. And when they got there, I think they realized that, hey, we're probably not likely to prevail on this, but, you know, we'd like to file a habeas application, a 2241 application in Maryland rather than in Kentucky, because I think they believed, whether rightly or wrongly, they'd have a more favorable hearing in the Maryland case. And I would point out, by bringing up the DNA testing motion, I want to point out and emphasize the language of Rule 29.15, because this particular habeas application has 9 claims. 7 of them raise claims of ineffective assistance of counsel. Rule 29.15 says for a prisoner who's been convicted of a felony by means of jury trial, which this petitioner has, may raise ineffective assistance of counsel and ineffective assistance of appellate counsel by means of a post-conviction review motion. And then it goes on to say that this rule provides the exclusive procedure by which such person may seek relief in the sentencing court for those claims. So not only does the attempt to rely on Rule 91 violate the plain language of Rule 91, it also violates the plain language of Rule 29.15, the PCR rule, which says that if you want to raise these kinds of claims in the sentencing court, the exclusive procedure to raise those kinds of claims in the sentencing court is through a motion filed under 29.15. This particular prisoner has already filed those motions, and they've been denied. So he's going to the sort of backstop habeas thing, but he's trying to shoehorn it, so to speak, into a situation. He's trying to shoehorn it into a jurisdiction where it doesn't belong, shoehorn it into a situation where it clearly doesn't fit, and under circumstances that raise grave concerns to our office of the proliferation of civil filings. So if their theory is accepted, I take one of their main arguments to be, well, even if this isn't authorized by 91.02, it's authorized by 91.06 and 532.70, which say that in situations where a habeas petition hasn't been filed, a court who perceives an illegality of detention can launch an inquiry into it and grant a writ, even if the petitioner hasn't applied for it. Those authorities, those particular statutes, are not applicable for at least two reasons. First, by their plain terms, they apply, and that's 91.06 and 532.70. They apply when no petition be presented for such writ. We're not in that circumstance here. This particular applicant has presented now multiple petitions for habeas corpus. He's filed the 111-page petition 2 days after he arrived by pursuant to the writ of testificandum, and he's amended it twice. But in addition to that, 532.70 says that this applies only, the court can do that only if it is within the jurisdiction of such court or judge. And that phrase, within the jurisdiction of such court or judge, refers to the exact same geographical limitations on habeas venue that are imposed by 91.02. In fact, I didn't realize this when we wrote our brief, but the Southern District has held that expressly in a case called State against Sexton at 75 Southwest 3rd 304. The Southern District held that the meaning of that phrase in 532.70, within the jurisdiction of such court or judge, tracks Rule 91.02a, quote, which states that habeas corpus proceedings must be brought in the court having jurisdiction over the confinement. In other words, there's no freewheeling exception to the habeas venue rules that's created by 532.70. If a judge in some other jurisdiction thought, oh, we've got a problem, we have an illegally detained prisoner, if that judge wanted to sua sponte initiate habeas proceedings, so to speak, that judge would have to transfer them to the right county, just like this judge is obligated to do. I see my time's expired, so I'll stand down if there's no further questions.
I have a question before you are seated. If in fact the court believes that the word custody could reasonably be interpreted to mean physical or legal custody, and could rule either way, for purposes of guiding us in that decision, there certainly are reasons that you argue that the entity with the legal custody has the authority to answer and are holding them. But I can also see the circumstance where, in this case, if there were some basis that the habeas was challenging regarding being held in Jackson County when transferred, there would seem to to be a need to also have the ability to challenge being held in Jackson County when you're physically there. And would our ruling that it's legal custody versus physical custody preclude a prisoner from under these circumstances ever challenging when their rights are violated if they are in Jackson County on a writ to testify?
I would say no. I think there's two questions there, if I may. The second question, I think, first. If the court were to hold that, I think that the relevant custody is the custody of the whose legality the petitioner is challenging. So if this prisoner were in DeKalb County and he were writted down to Jackson County and his argument was, it's totally illegal to move me to Jackson County, move me back to DeKalb County right away. If it's, in other words, that it's the legality of the detention in Jackson County that he's challenging, then the custody, the relevant custody, is the custody that's occurring in Jackson County. So if there were a circumstance, for example, where a prisoner was held in one location pursuant to a sentence, but then was moved to another location and didn't want to be in the new location, it was challenging
even
the legality
if they weren't
of the
challenging
transfer.
The legality of being held, I guess maybe he would be. I was just thinking of circumstances that might occur in Jackson County as opposed to just the authority to transfer.
Okay, I'm not aware of a different hypothetical to address that, but I do think that if the court, if the rule of the court's decision is that the relevant custody is the custody whose legality is being challenged, I think that will result in a situation where it's filed in the right place every time. And then just to Your Honor's first point where you suggested that the court might, if the court does conclude that the word custody is ambiguous as between the legal authority and the physical confinement, which I don't think the court should conclude, that I think the court should conclude there is plain meaning, but if the court were determined that there were ambiguity, then the court would be authorized to go to all the, you know, the various canons of construction to see how do we resolve that ambiguity. And for all the reasons I've stated, all of those principles of interpretation strongly support the state's position in this particular case, especially Rule 29.15, which also forecloses the exercise of authority here. Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel, if Judge Mitkiff concluded, were to conclude that Mr. Kidd ought to be discharged, who is she going to tell that to?
It depends where he is when she enters that order. Right now he is in the Jackson County Detention Center, and if he is there, then that order should go to, it's no longer Kenneth Conley, it was Joe Pacini, it's whoever our former Royals Hall of Famer first second baseman says it's going to be. So it's going to be a question of who has, so right now.
And he's not a party to this lawsuit. And if Mr. Kidd has moved back to DeKalb County, the warden is not a party to this lawsuit. So why is she ordering people who are not parties to her lawsuit, to the lawsuit before her, why is she, or how would she ever order them to do anything?
Well, she is pursuing, the initial order in terms of bringing Mr. Kidd to Jackson County was issued in the DNA action, State of Missouri versus Ricky Kidd, a criminal case which the statute gives her the explicit right to bring by writ of habeas corpus ad testificandum a person to her courtroom, to her county in custody. And so she has absolutely the right to do that, which she did. And ordered and served that writ on the superintendent of Crossroads Correctional Center and also on Mr. Conley, the director of the Jackson County Jail, and the writ was complied with. And by its express terms, the writ tells Superintendent Conley to take custody of Mr. Kidd, keep him in care and custody and produce him.
I understand those are historical facts. My
yes.
question deals with the future. And how is she going to order some person who is not a party to the writ, to the habeas case, to discharge him?
Your Honor, when we talked about who's going to argue this case, and I appreciate Mr. Bradshaw's mention of, you know, bring in the old guy because he has some institutional memory about this. The last time I argued a habeas case in this court issued its writ under the style of in the matter of the competency of Stephen Parkus. The way that happened was a motion to recall the mandate to avail my client of the benefit of a retroactive Supreme Court decision. This court decided it would take that motion as a writ of habeas corpus, appointed Judge Stillwell to hear evidence in Washington County, and then based on his findings of fact and conclusions of law, issued an opinion and a mandate granting habeas corpus relief with no respondent. Now, it is an easily curable problem that we can add the superintendent of the Jackson County Department of Corrections, should that be where Mr. Kidd is. We didn't actually ask her to take a party off the case, but...
Well, but who's defending the claims until you allow that to happen?
My worthy...
You want to add a respondent when the case is over.
Your Honor, in all of these cases, the interest of the state of Missouri is ably represented by the Attorney General.
Well, usually it's the interest of the custodian.
Although in habeas, Your Honor, the custodian is really more akin to a defendant ad litem in a civil case. The interest of the warden is virtually nil in the case.
What about the civil venue rules that require venue to be relooked at and established any time a party is added or subtracted from the case? So right now there's a plaintiff and no defendant. So how would the court even know where the proper venue is until a proper party is added?
Your Honor, almost everything we just heard from the relator was not told to Judge Midkiff in the district court before she made her ruling. And so the remedy typically in a venue case of this nature, if they have additional grounds for venue, would be pursuant to Rule 51.045 to move for leave to file a motion before Judge Midkiff and present these arguments to her. Those arguments have not been presented.
Well, did the state ask for a to add the warden at DeKalb County, and that was overruled?
Yes.
Okay, so that's clearly preserved, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So if this court thinks that the warden of DeKalb County is the proper custodian, then would you concede that venue is appropriate in DeKalb County?
Well, the question is whether venue is also inappropriate in Jackson County. Venue is appropriate in DeKalb County. However, Rule 9101 says that the rules of habeas corpus, the habeas rules, excuse me, in all particulars not provided by the foregoing, proceedings in habeas corpus shall be governed by and conform in the rules of civil procedure and the existing rules of general law upon the subject. The court may, by order, direct the form of such further details of procedure as may be necessary to the orderly course of the action and give effect to the remedy. The question is, what remedy must she enter in order to give effect to habeas? Habeas exalts substance over form. And when you look through the habeas corpus statute and the rules, the issue in every habeas corpus case is the custody, the foundation for the custody, the basis of the custody. But if she were to enter the writ of habeas corpus pursuant to Rule 9611, that writ would be binding on every law enforcement officer in the state of Missouri. It would be a crime for someone to arrest someone in the same cause of action who has been discharged on habeas, whether or not that person was named as a respondent in the action. And so the habeas rules do allow for that very scenario.
Right. But it assumes it's someplace when you have the trial, though, right? I mean, it assumes there's a trial someplace before that writ is issued, and that's really what we're trying to figure out today, where the appropriate place is to have the trial. And I'm just wondering if it's as simple as figuring out who the proper respondent is, and then the answer comes easy.
Right.
That's the question, but you're telling me we don't need a respondent.
Your Honor, the respondent isn't an essential party to this cause, isn't even a real party in interest in this cause, in the sense that the warden does not care whether Ricky Kidd is innocent or guilty or his trial was constitutional or not. The warden will follow whatever order is entered with respect to that conviction and sentence. And so the validity of that conviction and sentence is the only thing. And so the respondent's interests is really standing in for the state of Missouri, represented by the Attorney General in this matter. And so when we look at the overall system of habeas corpus and civil procedural rules, there is no question that Judge Midkiff is the only court in which a DNA motion could have been filed, because the statute requires that a motion for DNA testing be filed there. And I have, in other cases, filed a DNA motion in Gasconade County in Herman, simultaneously tried to litigate a habeas corpus petition in DeKalb County, and realized at the conclusion of that that I wasted a lot of Judge Wood's time when the habeas case overtook the DNA case and relief was granted. But it is exactly why.
But can't that be resolved in a different way, in a judicial transfer, a request for judicial transfer? So there's only one judge, but hearing it in two different counties?
Your Honor, that's a good question. I suppose we could have thought about that, but we take the rule in the case as we have it, just as in Abel versus Wiredale. The court was looking at a very similar issue. In fact, looked at exactly the same argument that's being presented here, which is that by the way the statute and the rule uses the word custody, they meant custody in the county, in the circuit court. And this court read the statute and the rule. And basically said, you know, if the rule says what it is, it doesn't matter if we don't like the results. We follow the plain language of the rule.
But under that argument, then there's either two potential kind of what I would call absurd results. One is that when every time the person's transferred, then the respondent then has to be changed, or that there can be two separate habeas actions pursued in different jurisdictions and different venues.
And that's one of the things that our venue rules are designed to prevent, is to prevent two different pieces of litigation, to prevent piecemeal litigation, where it requires two judges to become familiar with this massive record, where it requires two judges to hear evidence on this case. And so when we look at the habeas corpus statute, it is simply, you know, he is in custody in Jackson County within the meaning of the word custody. He also petitioned for a writ of habeas corpus under circumstances that are explicitly contemplated by the rule. In Rule 9106, if a court receives evidence in a proceeding before it, that any person, and the rule specifically says any person, any legal proceeding, any court, receives evidence that a person may be illegally confined, then that court has the power and the duty to exercise habeas corpus jurisdiction. I don't think it makes sense to say that duty exists where there is no petition, but it doesn't exist where there is a petition.
You know, I don't understand. Midkiff has already committed the body to the custody of the Department of Corrections. Okay, that person is housed in the custody in DeKalb. She can hear the motion for DNA in her court because she has the underlying case. And he's been authorized through ad test of a condom to take a trip for that purposes only. But the custody still resides, as she's previously committed in the Department of Corrections. I don't understand anything other than that here.
Your Honor, under the interpretation of Missouri's venue rules, the fact that one person is an appropriate respondent doesn't mean there can't also be another appropriate respondent. And when you look at the definition of custody, which just simply means guardian, a custodian is a guardian, a caretaker. Third dictionary definition is janitor. That's not the one we're talking about here.
As a sentencing judge, she has not changed the custody, who has custody in this case. She's just allowed him to come on an ad test of a condom writ to Jackson County to testify in a single issue in a case that she has, okay? We can debate whether she should have it or not, but she has it, okay? That's all she's done. She hasn't, in fact, changed the commitment that she gave to the Department of Corrections in DeKalb County
at sentencing?
Both actions deal with the same judgment, Your Honor. And the commitment, of course, is her commitment from her court.
Right.
And so she sentenced him. But under 9611, she has the power to do that very thing, to make whatever order is necessary to effectuate the writ of habeas corpus under Rule 9111. And so that is what she did. It is a cause of action that is very much ancillary to the DNA motion. She has the same, some of the overlapping legal issues. Some of the same witnesses are involved. It deals with the same judgment. It arises from the same transaction and occurrence. Every test with respect to ancillary jurisdiction of related claims is satisfied by these two cases, by the DNA motion and the habeas corpus petition. Every single reason of judicial economy and fairness, both with respect to the parties and the judge and the ability and the power of a judge to hear a case involving a prisoner over whom she has personal jurisdiction in his court, in her courtroom, all of those things weigh in favor of exercising habeas corpus jurisdiction in this very related action.
But this seems like a very unusual fact situation, and obviously we don't have a case right on point. The relator fears that there will be some kind of form shopping that could result from these types of actions. Can you address that?
The form shopping would be very limited, Your Honor, and I don't see that as really a problem or a concern in this case. First of all, the only alternative forum would be the sentencing court, which is where this court once upon a time chose to send all of these cases. And so you'd be talking about very limited opportunities. And this is a new event development because DNA statutes are brand new. They've been around in the blink of an eye in terms of judicial history. So it is rare, and there are no federal cases in which the court had proper jurisdiction and venue over a related judgment when a prisoner was writted in. In fact, in the Poole case that they rely so heavily on, the lawyer admitted to the district judge that the motion for resentencing was a ruse, that it was just here to bring him in. And in our case, we won the DNA motion. We got an order requiring that the DNA be tested to move forward. There was a finding that if the DNA testing does establish the identity of the perpetrators, that he very well might be able to move on to Section 547.037. And so this is not a case where there's a frivolous motion. There is something of substance that goes along with the writ that brought Mr. Kidd to the custody of the Jackson County Detention Center. It makes sense from a judicial economy point of view to follow the plain language of the rule that says that she has personal jurisdiction. He is in custody. He is in front of her.
You're saying the nature of the underlying issue being heard changes everything. Suppose he wasn't a party. Suppose he was just writted in to testify at testificandum in an unrelated proceeding. He was on a trip, as was stated by Mr. Sauer, by the federal court. He was on a trip to another court on an unrelated matter. All of a sudden, that other court would have authority to hear a habeas writ?
No, Your Honor. In that instance, he would not be in custody in relation to the conviction.
Wait a minute. Hold. He's being held in DeKalb under the conviction.
Yes.
He's transferred to Judge Draper's hypothetical circuit court under a writ, but he's being held under by virtue of the conviction. The local jailer is holding him by virtue of the writ of testificandum. But his custody there is not unrelated to the conviction. Presence might be unrelated to the underlying, to his dispute over his conviction.
Right. There wouldn't be anything of substance under the venue doctrines of the state of Missouri that would give venue to a judge in a proceeding totally unrelated to the prisoner's case. And that's really the question and the issue, is that when you have a prisoner before you, to restrict the definition of the word custody would really limit the requirement of Rule 91.06, because when we look at the plain language of the rule, it was appropriate for Judge Midkiff. She had not just the power but the duty to proceed. I see my light has been flashing.
I have an additional question for you. You argued that there is not any real or no necessary respondent, but the rules require a respondent.
The rules do require a respondent.
And the analysis you undertook was that the state of Missouri is the real party in interest, and they've stepped forward and they're engaged in the case. But if we accept your position that the filing should have occurred in Jackson County and is properly in Jackson County, then the director of the Jackson County Correctional Center would be the proper respondent under the rules.
Correct, Your Honor.
And there is no requirement that the state of Missouri represent the director of the Jackson County Correctional Center. He could have asked that the county council represent him.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, that's what happened.
And so there is no, as the person who's defending the suit, if it were the director of the Jackson County Correctional Center and the county council, they have no interest in and they have no knowledge of the matters that are alleged in the petition and the merits of any claims.
Let me make one addition to my earlier response to your question. As the rule requires the notice to go to the prosecuting attorney, who is the attorney for the state of Missouri, and that was done as well. And so there is an attorney under the rule that is required to be notified, not the county councilor, but the prosecuting attorney. In this case, it happened that both were notified. But the prosecuting attorney did very ably step in and represent the interests of the state of Missouri and brought in the attorney general to take over the habeas corpus case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I went over my time a great deal in the beginning, so maybe I'll just ask if there are additional questions the court would like to have addressed. Thank you, Your Honors. Thank you very much.
Thank you.